I had type 1 juvenile diabetes when I was 4 years old.
The reason that we're so interested in stem cell research is it seems to hold such hope and promise potentially for a cure. How do you look at anyone with cancer or Parkinson's or a spinal cord injury and say we're going to walk away from hope? How do I look my son in the face and tell him that we're going to walk away from hope? I can't.
That's a commercial produced and paid for by the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures titled Renee and Austin, featuring the mother and her son. Greetings and welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're talking about embryonic stem cell research. That's but one of the approaches taken by the advocates of embryonic stem cell research, destructive embryonic research, and human cloning for research purposes here in the state of Missouri, tugging a bit at the heartstrings, but also making that connection with the kind of diseases that people really fear. Juvenile diabetes, and then they have a long list of things that they say could be cured by embryonic stem cell research. So far, have those promises brought any fruit? It's Sunday night, September the 24th. We're coming to you live here on Issues Etc. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727. We do want to hear from you on this subject, 1-800-730-2727. You can also email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. issuesetc@kfuo.org. Those numbers again, 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727, or our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We'll be giving away a booklet titled Stem Cell Research, Understanding the Basics, to everyone who calls or emails us tonight on the program. Scott Klusendorf is a regular guest on the program. He joins us here for the second hour of the conversation. He's president of Life Training Institute. Scott, welcome back.
Todd, good to be back.
All right, Scott. You heard the ad that we played there in the open, Renee and Austin, a mother with a son who's suffering from juvenile diabetes, that they found out he had it when he was four. How do you respond to that angle of the advocates when it comes to embryonic stem cell research?
Well, you know, there's no doubt the ad's designed to pull at the heartstrings. Who wouldn't feel for their own kid needing a cure? The problem is the very thing that is put forth as the solution to the diseases mentioned, cancer and diabetes, and there was a third one, I don't recall what it was, the very thing that is proposed as the cure involves killing a human embryo, and the ad simply assumes that the embryos in question are not human beings. Let's retranslate a line from the ad. The line said this: how do I look at anyone with cancer and say, we're going to walk away from hope? Well, what if by walking away from hope, what we really meant was we're not going to kill a toddler to make a five-year-old better? Would that be properly called walking away from hope, or would that properly be called doing the right thing in spite of the cost to us personally? And I would argue that sometimes doing the right thing is costly, and sometimes it is painful. But we do it anyway because we don't want to be complicit in taking the lives of defenseless human beings.
How do you respond to someone who says, look, those of you who would stand in the way of hope, to use the words of the term, who walk away from hope, simply don't care, or you don't want these cures for those who suffer from these diseases?
Well, let's say that the issue was that we could cure all cancer and all we had to do was kill 20,000 teenagers to do it. Would someone in their right mind be able to make the claim that I don't want people to be cured because I won't allow these teenagers to be butchered? The whole argument they're making there is extremely presumptuous, and it simply assumes that we're not talking about the destruction of innocent human life. They don't argue for that. They present no evidence to show these embryos aren't human, at least not any evidence I find compelling. They just simply assume that these embryos are not human and then go on to accuse the rest of us as being anti-science, anti-cures, and, oh, we really don't love people. Todd, I've even had people try to use the Bible this way and say, well, you know, Jesus cured everyone. He was for healing people. Why aren't you Christians for healing the way that Jesus was? Well, by healing, they mean, of course, killing one group of human beings to heal another.
There was a chilling juxtaposition, Scott. I mentioned in the last hour that we had interviewed Don Rubin, who is the chairman of the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures, advocating for embryonic stem cell research. And after that, we opened the phone lines during our weekday program to take calls from our listeners. We had a female caller. It was very chilling. And she made the argument. She said, look, to save one of my present children that I have from a fatal disease, I would allow an embryo in my womb to be harvested and to have whatever done by way of research or harvesting organs to save that present child. Now, to me, that sounded chilling. To her, it sounded like the loving thing to do for her children as they exist now. But is that exactly the kind of logic that's being used here for embryonic stem cell research?
It is in the case of what I referenced last hour as the hardcore utilitarian argument. There are some people who say, ethics be gone. I don't care what's right or wrong. I'm going to do what I want to do to save my own self-interest or that of my child. Someone who says, ethics be gone, I'm going to do what I want to do, is a sociopath. And you don't reason with that person. You do the best you can to pass laws to protect the rest of us. It's sad that some people put as the highest good the avoidance of suffering. But, Todd, if we put the avoidance of our own suffering or that of a family member as the highest moral objective, we are going to run awry because we will end up trampling on the rights of others. What if this woman, instead of saying, I'm going to kill my embryo to cure my two-year-old, she said, I'm going to kill my newborn to cure my two-year-old? Would we applaud her as a moral hero then? I think right away that very same woman would say, no, you can't kill the newborn to cure the two-year-old. Ah, then we can see right away she doesn't really believe her embryo is a human being the way she would believe that her newborn was. So it may be she's, again, just assuming that the embryos in question are not human beings.
Another sleight of hand that came from previous conversations on embryonic stem cell research was a term that I had not heard before. It was raised by a caller, and then I've heard it in the press since, pre-embryo.
Right.
Is there such a thing as a pre-embryo?
Well, not in the medical literature. I've certainly heard it on the lips of newscaster, and I've seen it in the pen work of journalists, but no, not in the medical literature. In fact, Lee Silver, who's a proponent of cloning and embryonic stem cell research, and also someone with a bit of a scientific background, is flat out right when he says this term pre-embryo is not only non-existent in the medical literature, at least the credible medical literature, it was invented specifically to justify things like embryonic stem cell research, like IVF treatments that involve controversy. And he is at least being very candid that this term is being used for political means, not because it reflects the current state of the medical literature.
Scott, what is the toughest argument to refute when debating a proponent of embryonic stem cell research?
There's two types of tough arguments. There's the emotionally tough ones, meaning ones that pull at the heartstring and lead people to just forget about all moral reasoning altogether. And then there are those that are more philosophical. The heartstring ones, of course, are like the ads we've just heard. They're not hard to refute philosophically. They're very foolish, to be honest. Any student who's taken even an entry-level logic course can see the question-begging nature of the claims that are involved, can see the fallacies that run throughout these ads. It's not hard to see that stuff. But these ads work because they tap into our deepest intuitions, but they do so in a way that's not legitimate. What parent wouldn't say to anyone, I'll do everything I can for my kid to preserve his life? Well, most of us are going to say that, but if we're Christian, we're going to have a little bit of a limit there. And if we're a responsible, good citizen, we're going to put limits too. There are some things we won't do to save our own children, like go kill 70 other people so our own kid could live. For example, if I'm in a burning lab and I have to get out, or a burning building, and I have a choice of saving my daughter or saving 10 other people, well, I'm going to save my daughter. But here's the thing, I'm not going to slit the throats of the other 10 people on my way out. And I think that as a parent, I recognize that saving my daughter is the priority, but it doesn't give me a license to harm other human beings. The philosophical argument that's difficult and it's not difficult logically, but people tend to connect to it, and you have to do a lot of explaining to resolve it.
Scott, before you go on, we're up against a break.
Sure.
I want you to save that philosophical argument
that's
difficult for the other side of that break and get your response to it. Scott Klusendorf is our guest. He's president of Life Training Institute. Tonight on the program, we're talking about stem cell research, embryonic stem cell research. When we come back, his answer to the toughest philosophical argument made by the proponents of embryonic stem cell research and his response to it. Stay tuned. Issues, Etc. guest, Dr. Arthur Jest on the Good Shepherd Institute, November 5th through 7th, on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We are dedicated to hearing and discerning the clear voice of Jesus, the Good Shepherd, through our attention to the preaching, the historic liturgies, the catechesis, and the hymns of the church that communicate Christ. We hold a yearly conference during All Saints weekend in which we explore these things. We're particularly interested in serving congregations and parishes, parish pastors, musicians, and other church workers, and also helping the laity to come to love and appreciate the treasures of our Lutheran faith and our Lutheran liturgy and our Lutheran life.
Join Issues, Etc. as we broadcast live from the Good Shepherd Institute, November 5th through 7th, at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. For more information, look for the Good Shepherd Institute logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This isn't your grandfather's church. God is doing a new thing. Deeds, not creeds. You've heard Christians say things like this. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. I've written an article for the Next Issues, Etc. journal titled Things Christians Say But Shouldn't. We'll send you a free complimentary copy. Just call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. What's wrong with statements like a church for our generation, be all you can be Christianity, or reinventing church? Find out with the Next Issues, Etc. journal. Plus, the Wittenberg Trail feature details Dr. Chris Mitchell's journey from skeptical atheism to the certainty of the gospel. 1-800-737-0172. Now, if you enjoy Issues, Etc., the radio show, you need to get the Issues, Etc. journal. Ask for a free complimentary copy. 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkins. Scott Klusendorf is our guest, our subject, embryonic stem cell research. Before we go back to the phones, very briefly, Scott, if you would, you were going to outline the toughest philosophical argument made by the proponents of embryonic stem cell research and destructive research, and your response to it.
Well, the toughest one to explain, though it's not tough to figure out, is this whole idea that the embryo is not yet self-aware, so what's the big deal with killing it? The idea being it hasn't suffered any harm. It can't experience harm. It's not aware of itself existing over time. It doesn't have any desires to go on living. It's not self-aware, therefore doesn't have a cell, or therefore doesn't have a right to life. What's interesting, of course, about this claim is no one ever tells us why self-awareness is a value-giving property in the first place. In other words, why do you have to be self-aware to have a right to life? That's never stipulated anywhere. It's simply assumed that self-awareness is decisive somehow. But as I like to point out to people, Todd, I could just as easily take out self-awareness and assert some other value-giving property and get away with it, too, if we're going to just rely on ad hoc explanations. What if I said no one has a right to life until they're 6'2" and weigh 180 pounds? That's no less ad hoc than what they're proposing here. But even more disturbing, if self-awareness is what gives us value, newborns fail to qualify because they're not self-aware until several months after birth. It would also mean that many animals that are more self-aware than newborn infants would have a greater right to life than our day-old infant. And it would lead us to the point that Peter Singer inevitably ends up at, where he argues essentially that we have more of a moral obligation to a self-aware puppy than we do a day-old, non-self-aware newborn.
Let's go to the phones, and we'll begin with Stephen in Bolivar, Missouri. He listens on KSCV. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, gentlemen.
What's your question or comment, Stephen?
Well, I heard you say before the break they're wanting to call it early stem cell research. My question is simply, early what?
That's a good, honest question. Thank
right.
you, Stephen. Scott.
Well, yeah, I mean, exactly. Early what? The thing here is, this term early is being tossed around as if somehow it carries some deep moral significance. And it doesn't. There's no significance attached to the word whatsoever unless you're prepared to argue why early is better than later. But again, I think people are being taken for fools here, because most people, if they haven't studied abortion or studied embryonic stem cell research, or if they're not schooled in philosophy or critical thinking, somehow think that as we age, we, I guess, somehow get more rights, that rights kind of just come to us in a cumulative sense rather than us having them from the moment we begin to exist. And this does raise an important point that is deeply disturbing, Todd. Our founders, you take anyone from Jefferson to Adams and follow it straight through to Abraham Lincoln, you will see that they argue that our rights as human beings, our basic fundamental rights, what we call natural rights, come to be when we come to be. You don't get them as you grow and mature, and you don't get them because government grants them. You have them simply because you're human, which means the minute your humanity comes on the scene, these natural rights come on the scene. The other view says, no, you don't have a right to life that is intrinsic, that is natural. It's something that accrues over time as you gain certain accidental properties, like self-awareness, like the ability to live independent of someone else. But, of course, the minute you do that, you shoot the idea of human equality out the door, because all of us have those accidental properties in varying degrees. Some of us listening right now are very self-aware. Others of us are falling asleep. Others are driving their cars, and they've had 8 cups of coffee, and they're raring to go. But it doesn't follow our right to life varies just because our level of self-awareness varies.
Justin's listening on KSIV here in St. Louis. Justin, thank you very much for being patient, and welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you, gentlemen. My question, and I guess as well a comment, is I hear a lot that we're emphasizing the embryonic stem cell and the destruction of an embryo is, of course, being a moral issue. How about the aspect and a little bit of focus on the cloning side of things?
All right. Now, that is a very good question. And, of course, in the course of our conversation tonight, the whole cloning issue has been somewhat peripheral, because we've been focusing on not how the embryo is produced, but the embryo itself when it is produced. But if you would speak to the moral ambiguities and difficulties of human cloning, beginning with this one, Scott, has anyone actually done it?
Not to our knowledge. Lots of people have claimed it, but lots of people have claimed all kinds of things. Bioethics right now is an unmitigated disaster when it comes to unsubstantiated claims. Robert Lanza over at Advanced Cell Technology in Massachusetts every other week comes out with a wild-eyed claim that the media reports on the front pages of the nation's newspapers, and then 3 days later, everybody's backpedaling. 2 weeks ago, he was claiming he had found a way, actually 3 weeks ago now, he had found a way to get embryonic stem cells without destroying embryos. Then you go read the actual study he did, and you find out that every one of the embryos he used was destroyed. So this kind of thing is going on all over the place. Nobody, though, has cloned a human being that I am aware of and successfully done so anywhere in the Western world or anywhere else. We've had a few cult groups claim to do it lately, but no evidence at all.
Okay, then back to the caller's issue here. Everybody wants to use various terms. The most accurate terms medically would be something like somatic cell nuclear transfer. But should we be using the word cloning as just as a matter of course, because it actually communicates that process by which these embryos would be, if they could be, would be produced, rather than falling into the jargon, because maybe we're playing into the proponents of embryonic stem cell research's hands.
Right. And let me clarify, a moment ago, I perhaps misunderstood your question, Todd. I thought you were referencing, has anybody produced a cloned human being that's been born? And that has not been done. But I will tell you this, I have no doubt we will see human cloning in terms of cloning human embryos descend upon us sooner rather than later. I'm not at all in doubt about that. And it raises incredible moral questions for us. Number one being, of course, should we be creating human beings solely for destructive research? Because that's what would be going on here with somatic cell nuclear transfer, which is, as you say, human cloning. I love how proponents of embryonic stem cell research want to distinguish between what they call reproductive cloning to create a baby versus therapeutic cloning for research cures. The truth is, Todd, all cloning is reproductive because all cloning produces, in the end, a living human being. And the only question is, will we allow that human being to grow and develop and be born 9 months later, or will we kill that human being using destructive medical research? That's the only question.
Let's talk with Matt in Florida, and we'll get a beginning to a response to Matt's call. Matt, welcome to Issues Etc.
Good evening, Todd. Good evening, Scott, as well.
Hi, Matt.
Bring up 3 points here. One of them, you mentioned the whole idea of self-awareness. That's just really just sinful arrogance. Someone is saying, well, I possess a quality that the embryo doesn't possess, therefore I have more value than the embryo does. That's cut and dried.
All right.
One thing that I've read about, and it was actually brought up in a previous discussion on Issues, et cetera, was the idea of patents. It supposedly will be easier for pharmaceutical companies to patent an embryonic stem cell cure than it would be an adult stem cell cure.
Your third point there?
The third point is, you know, how do they get around this whole idea that this is just a slippery slope. We're going to create another subclass of human beings to subjugate, which is something that human beings do over and over and over again in history.
Thank you very much, Matt. Those are three great points. And when we come back from this break, we're going to get Scott's response to each and every one of them, especially his point there that he made at the beginning, this whole issue of, well, I'm self-aware, therefore I have value. The embryo is not self-aware, therefore does not possess the value that I do. It really does become an issue of the haves and the have-nots, doesn't it? Or maybe the appeal of embryonic stem cell research is this. Out of sight, out of mind. They're so little, they're so microscopic, I can't see them, therefore they don't matter. We'll get a response to Matt's call right after this. Every month, we tell you about our Issues Etc. Book of the Month. Well, our Book of the Month for September isn't a book. It's an audio CD and a companion booklet. It's called Listening to Luther. On this audio CD, Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb narrates Luther's Small Catechism. This narration is accompanied by hymns that fit the theme of each part of the catechism. Listening to Luther is $14.99. You can find it at either of the two Concordia Publishing House bookstores, one at 3558 South Jefferson in the city, the other on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. When you stop by, mention Issues Etc. and ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, the audio CD, Listening to Luther. The two locations, 3558 South Jefferson or on the campus of Concordia Seminary. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Listening to Luther.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Todd Wilkin here again, talking with Pastor Matt Harrison, Executive Director of LCMS World Relief, about the world's AIDS crisis. Matt, talk about how the AIDS crisis especially affects children.
Nearly 20% of AIDS deaths are children. Children who, through absolutely no ethical or moral fault of their own, have this curse upon them. And these are children where it's very easy to look upon them in pictures and say, well, they are those children. But then you meet them, each one of them, and you hear each one's name. And you talk to them about where they go to church and what they dream about and what they would like to have in their little lives. Something as simple as a chair, let alone a toy, or a bed, or somebody who loves them. and you can't but respond.
How is LCMS World Relief and the many who support it, how are they responding to this crisis?
Traditionally, we've done most of the response by way of education. That is, we've provided resources to our partners, many in Africa, but also AIDS in Thailand becomes becoming an extreme challenge, and also in Russia, providing dollars so that pastors, church workers, health workers can be trained on AIDS. So education is very important, and we believe education is really key within a strong Lutheran context of law and gospel, and one that has a proper understanding of sexuality as God's gift, and the blessings that God gives us there, and the blessings of faithfulness and monogamy. So that has been important. We have, in the last several years, been very active with several orphanages in Kenya, and that has been just a wonderful joy. We just finished building a brand new orphanage that houses about 60 children. It's amazing. For about $30,000, we were able to build a complete orphanage. We just added to the Matango Orphanage in western Kenya an entire medical clinic for really very little money comparatively. And we're increasingly going in this direction, providing resources for congregations in Africa so they can deal with their own HIV/AIDS orphans.
LCMS World Relief offers Christ-centered, cross-focused help to victims of the world's AIDS crisis. For more information about LCMS World Relief, find them at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call them toll-free 1-888-930-4438. LCMS World Relief, concerned for both body and soul. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about embryonic stem cell research. Scott Klusendorf, president of Life Training Institute, is our guest. You can check out the website for Life Training Institute. Go first to our website, issuesetc.org, and under that section titled Links, you'll find a direct link to Scott Klusendorf and Life Training Institute, issuesetc.org. Before the break, Scott, Matt had several points to make. I want to fold point one and three together, where he talked about self-awareness becoming an issue of the haves and the have-nots. And his third point was that this is essentially what has happened, the plague of the bane of human history, subjugating a class of human beings for the benefit of others.
Well, Matt very cleverly directed us toward a problem we face now in bioethics called personhood ethics. And personhood ethics is the belief that humans by nature do not have inherent dignity and inherent rights. Rather, persons do. Well, what's the difference between a human and a person? And how can there be such a thing as humans that are not persons? Well, the answer from those advocates of personhood ethics goes like this. You are a person when you have certain cognitive abilities, such as the desire to see yourself existing over time, the ability to interact with others in your environment, your immediate capacity to exercise self-awareness. These are things that apply to persons, but since the fetuses and embryos in question don't have the immediate capacities for these things, we will set them aside as a separate class of humans who may be biological human entities, but they are not persons with rights. That's personhood ethics. And self-awareness is typically the decisive figure or the decisive factor that people point to without ever giving us a reason why it's a value-giving property in the first place or why having more of it wouldn't make you more of a person than someone who has less of it.
Matt also raised the issue of patents coming from destructive medical research on human embryos. Is that a warranted concern?
It is. The U.S. Congress has made attempts to ban those who would try to patent embryos or patent cloning research. I'm not quite sure what's going to become of that in the future. It's kind of unclear. But it is something that is just one more puzzle piece in this ever-evolving slide we're on away from human dignity.
Let's go back to the phones to Palo Alto, California, where Rana listens on KFAX. Hi, Rana. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thank you. When embryonic stem cell research funding went on the ballot in California, the League of Women Voters put on a symposium at a local liberal church, but there were no speakers on the panel that spoke against the measure. And I had done a lot of research online at the Center for Bioethics and Culture in Oakland. And after the program, I was able to take to task one of the signers of the bill that comes from Stanford University, and I really made him angry, approaching him with things like, you know, this isn't going to cure Alzheimer's, they'll tell you that, and in small symposiums they'll admit it, but the advertising, you know, they wouldn't admit it. But, you know, your guest gave me a wonderful comeback because he kind of dramatically pulled a hair out of his head when he was on the panel, and he said, look, this is a stem cell. And it occurred to me, the hair out of his head will not make a baby, yet the embryonic stem cell would.
Thank you very much, and thanks for listening out there on KFAX, Rana. All right, Scott?
Well, I understand where Rana's going there, and I want to point out something Senator Dianne Feinstein once said. Her defense for embryonic stem cell research was to say, look, we can put a stem cell in a woman's womb and it won't become a baby. Well, I don't know of anybody who has ever thought that that would be the case. It was a very foolish thing for her to say. What we say as pro-life advocates is that the embryos in question are not stem cells. They are human beings who have stem cells. In other words, they are already whole living organisms, while the stem cells we're talking about are merely part of an already existing human organism, in this case the embryo. And there's a lot of attempts out there to confuse the public as to what a stem cell is versus what an embryo is, and it's all just part of the smokescreen process we see going on.
Claire in High Ridge listens on KSIV. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Todd, and to your guest as well. I attended the Right to Life symposium last year, and I've tried to advocate negativity, if you want, towards the proposed amendment here in Missouri. But the one thought that came up in trying to communicate to people that I haven't gotten an answer even when I've asked it is, if you think of the issue as those who want it would donate either their sperm or eggs, or think about whether your children would be the donor, so it would be your grandchildren that would be, you know, being donated. Would that possibly make people think about, you know, a negative aspect of this bill and perhaps defeat it? An answer, perhaps. I'll hang up and listen.
All right, Claire, thank you so much for the call, too, and for the question. What do you make of Claire's proposed way of dealing with this issue to kind of cast this in its proper light?
Well, if I'm understanding her question correctly, she is basically saying that we should help people see these embryos that will be destroyed as future children or grandchildren. Was that what she was getting at?
I think that was the gist of
it. Okay, good. You know, it might work, but if you're a secular person and you don't believe that these embryos are human beings, if we simply assert that they are without any additional premises in our argument, it's going to appear to them like we're question begging, like we're simply assuming what we're trying to prove. I don't know if that's going to work. I mean, for years, the pro-life movement has tried to frame everything around the question of it's a baby. And I, for one, am not convinced, Todd, that's the way to go. I would rather just say it's a defenseless human being. Whether or not you want to call it a baby or not doesn't matter to me. It's still a human being, and I can prove that scientifically. So it's hard to say. It might work to do that. I wouldn't be opposed to trying. I think what I would do is simply go with a very straightforward statement. Hey, Missouri, do you support creating human beings for medical research? And let that question hang out there.
Tony's listening in Oregon on KFAX. Hi, Tony.
Hi.
What's your question or comment?
Well, I had kind of two questions. Does Scott think that the stem cells that are not embryonic are also as sacred in his argument, and I was listening. The other question is, I was listening to his explanation of what he considered soft something, and my problem is that there are people from ages, all ages, mostly old people, who have serious problems, health problems, and I believe that showing some kind of relief or mercy on their existing life instead of hypothesizing about that material that's going to be thrown in the dumpster behind the hospital could have saved their life, I would choose to use the embryonic stem cell in those cases also.
All right, Tony. He's laid out kind of a simple way there, Scott, many of the arguments we've been dealing with in these 2 hours. Let's take them one at a time. He asks whether or not you would consider stem cells from non-embryonic sources to be as sacred as his word, as you would allege that those taken from embryos are. You're not really making the argument that the stem cells are sacred, but
no,
the embryo is.
That's right. My problem isn't that we're using stem cells, because I don't consider stem cells sacred. I do consider the human beings that will be killed so we can get stem cells to have intrinsic value, and therefore I oppose a particular stem cell research treatment that requires killing innocent human beings to get those stem cells. But I don't consider the stem cells themselves sacred any more than I consider a heart sacred or a liver sacred or a toe sacred. It's the human being that will be destroyed that is the problem. That's the issue. He mentioned a couple of other things there.
Yeah, the second argument that he laid out was, look, if it could cure someone with a serious malady, and this material, as he said, is just going to be thrown in the dumpster behind the hospital, why not use it anyway?
Okay, two things. I would not argue it is wrong in every case to use body parts or cells from someone who's going to die, but that is only in a very abstract case, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But here's what I would get at. Prisoners on death row are going to die anyway. Do we say, hey, all that body tissue is going to go to waste, so let's go ahead and before the execution, go ahead and start doing grisly medical experiments on them? No, we don't do that. Soldiers who are mortally wounded on a battlefield may, in fact, be in the throes of death, and they're going to die anyway. But we don't say, hey, their bodies are going to go to waste, let's go ahead and quickly grab a heart and a liver while we still can. No, what we do is make those dying patients as comfortable as possible till they die from their injuries, and then we go forward with burial or whatever else they may have consented to prior to their deaths. I mentioned there's an abstract case where it may be okay to use someone who is dying's body parts. Let's say, for example, Todd, I'm attacking a terrorist camp in Iraq, and I'm an American soldier. And I am leading a group of 10 men. We're going to free prisoners being held by these terrorists.
Scott, you would, hang on for just a second, because we're going to take a break. I don't want you to get into your scenario there too far and then have to cut you off. So when we come back from this break, let's listen to this scenario, this limited and rather hypothetical scenario, wherein Scott would say, okay, now here's a case where we're talking about using another person who is dying for the benefit of others. And we'll see how it stacks up. Stay tuned. Here's Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Will Whedon, on why you should support LCMS World Relief.
LCMS World Relief is so important because it gives flesh to the love that Christ commands us to have. I'm reminded of the words from 1 John, where the apostle wrote, little children, let us not love with word or tongue, but in deed and in truth. And when you support LCMS World Relief, that is precisely what you're doing. You're loving in deed and in truth. You're providing food for the hungry and shelter for the homeless and clothing for the naked. It's a way that the love of Christ is actually incarnate and touches these people's lives, and it's just a wonderful thing.
For more information about LCMS World Relief, look for their logo at our website, issuesetc.org, or call them area code 314-996-1683. 314-996-1683. LCMS World Relief.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand, I cannot do otherwise. God help me." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths to the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly contributor to Issues Etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, or reformer, visit our website, issuesetc.org, and look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, grace, faith, scripture, for the sake of Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues Etc., and you. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about stem cell research. Scott Klusendorf is our guest. We do have several resources on the issue of stem cell research posted at our website for you to browse through, to peruse, and to read in detail, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section. You'll find these articles, including several resources pertaining to Amendment 2 in Missouri, issuesetc.org. All right, before the break, you were responding to Tony's call, and I had to cut you off because you were just about to get into a limited case, a scenario that you can envision, wherein the issue of a dying person acting in the benefit of others.
Actually, what I meant to say there was someone who had been killed. I'm attacking a terrorist camp, and in the process of liberating a group of prisoners held hostage by these terrorists, one of my own men gets hit and needs an immediate liver transplant. We've got the medical facilities nearby to do it, and there happens to be nearby one of the dead terrorists that we killed in attacking the camp. This terrorist didn't consent to his organs being used this way, but weighing the greatest moral good here, do I let my own man die, or do I violate the consent of this already dead terrorist, I think I would go ahead and save my own man's life.
But that is an extremely limited scenario.
And that would never justify the embryonic stem cell research here. But I was just trying to show that in Tony's scenario there, although it could be possible that there could be a rare case where we shouldn't let, quote, tissue go to waste, it would be extremely limited and wouldn't apply in the case of embryonic stem cells.
Listening on KCRL in Camdenton, Missouri. Janine, thanks for waiting. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
From what I understand, our governor here is a pro-life Southern Baptist, and without putting words in his mouth, I have never gotten anything back from him but a form letter. My understanding of his belief is that the product of cloning, of SCNT, whether it be Dolly the sheep or human being, is not in actuality what it is biologically. He doesn't believe that Dolly the sheep was really a sheep, even though she looked like a sheep, and he doesn't believe that anything produced by SCNT would be really a human, even if you gave birth and raised it up. And the only thing I've been able to deduce from this is that he somehow thinks that since the soul comes from God and we are creating this life, that it must not have a soul and therefore not be genuinely human or something. And I haven't been able to get a commitment to that from him. How do you deal with that?
Okay, Janine, that's a great question, especially as it regards to the issue of the soul from the religious standpoint. And again, I don't think either Scott nor I have any direct knowledge of what the governor of Missouri believes on that issue. But let's deal with the whole argument that's often made, and it is made quite a bit. I've got an email on this whenever we talk about embryonic stem cell research, Scott. They'll say, look, I as a Christian believe that the soul does not inhabit the body until some time after conception, therefore I feel no problem with dealing with these embryos as fodder for research.
Well, that leaves you in the inevitable position, or I should say the unenviable position, of arguing that my body existed before I existed. I mean, it really leads to some weird logical and philosophical positions. Why would anybody believe that there can be such a thing as a living body without a soul? I mean, a body without a soul, in my book, is a corpse. I don't know how you could have such a thing. And why should we even assume there could be such a thing? And I don't know the governor's position. I haven't read it or heard him say anything on it. But if it's as you represent it, it seems odd that he would reject the clear scientific evidence that the embryo is a human being. It's also odd that he would argue that our laws for protecting someone depends on them having a soul. I'm not aware of any law in our books protecting human beings that stipulate you have to have a soul. Now, I'm just arguing legally here. I happen to believe all humans have souls, but it's just an odd way to argue from a legal perspective.
Kent listens in Neenah, Wisconsin on WEMI. Hi, Kent.
Hey, my question is what's really the motivating factor behind the support for embryonic stem cell research when most of the promising research is all in the area of adult stem cells? It makes me think that the motivation might not so much be successful research, but, you know, is there a lot of money in this?
Oh, that's a good question. I guess whenever we're asking things like this, we should follow the money. Is he on to something there, Scott?
I think so. There is no doubt that big biotech stands to make a ton of money with ballot initiatives. Here's what's happening. The private investors aren't ponying up the cash that they want to do this kind of thing. So they're going to the public trying to get tax dollars to do it. California just went in debt $6 billion over 30 years. Now, keep in mind, we're talking a state that's already in economic shambles. And now they've got another $6 billion over their heads. And no governor, no state legislature in the future can reverse this because it's a constitutional amendment. And what's happening is big biotech is going for the sure thing. Let's get the money from the taxpayers. It's safe. It's economically immune to any kind of withdrawal from people going, hey, I don't want to invest in that anymore. And that's what they're doing.
Okay, you mentioned before the success of adult stem cell research. Is there a danger, is there a pitfall in making our argument against embryonic stem cell research on the basis of the success of adult stem cell research, as successful as it is?
Yeah, there is a danger, because what happens if there comes a day when the embryonic cells do the trick? And I have always been one that said our primary argument should be on the status of the embryo, which is a point we touched on earlier this evening. That has to be the issue. The other side is wrong by assuming the embryos in question are not human beings. Our side tends to get too excited on the cures that we now see from adult stem cells, and they neglect the philosophical arguments we need to be making in the public square for the full humanity of the embryo. Look, Todd, what happens to our case if 3 years from now embryonic stem cells are shown to cure something like juvenile diabetes? If that day comes, and it might, if they find a way around the tumor formation and they find a way to do this without costing a ton of money, well, guess what? Our case is in real trouble. We have to make the point that this research is wrong because it takes the life of a human being without justification.
All right, then let's bring this one home, literally in this case, home to Missouri, where in a scant number of weeks, Missouri voters will be voting on amendment to yes or no to allow destructive research on human embryos, the creation of embryos for human for that research, and cloning for biomedical research, embryonic stem cell research. Why should Missourians vote no on Amendment 2?
For two reasons. Number one, let me give you the moral one. The moral reason is we shouldn't kill one human being to benefit another. Hardship doesn't justify homicide. Just because there are people suffering hardship from diseases doesn't mean we should have a right to go strip another human being of his natural right to live so that we can feel better. That's the moral argument. The second argument is the practical one. Right now, according to the best research, we have other alternatives to embryonic research, and those other alternatives are working quite nicely in actually curing disease. We've got 72 known diseases being treated with adult stem cells. I would put the money where the smart money should go, on the thing that's actually working, not on the speculative research that may work in the future, but at the moment isn't.
To find out how to contact our guest in this hour, Scott Klusendorf, and Life Training Institute, or to help Issues Etc. defend life from beginning to end by making a tax-deductible gift, call our resource line 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172, or write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. The address again is Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. Scott, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for sticking with us for the 2 hours, and thanks for being our guest.
Todd, I'll do a late-night conversation with you anytime.
I'm glad to hear that. We appreciate it.
Thanks, bro.
I don't know what the appeal is. I know that the appeal for some is a deep and sincere concern for loved ones. A mother who has a child with juvenile diabetes, and she hopes against hope that there is a cure out there someplace, and she is just willing to move heaven and earth to see that happen. I cannot argue with the desire of a mother to see a child cured of something that will prove to be fatal. Parkinson's disease and the others that seem to be promised by way of cures. I understand the desire for the cures, and make no mistake about it, the opposition to embryonic stem cell research morally is based in exactly the same concern for human lives. It simply includes in that category of human life the embryo, not just those who suffer from diseases, but the embryo as well. Ergo, the basic argument, we will not destroy an innocent human being for the sake of benefiting others. I know the appeal probably for many who just deal with it as a hypothetical is, out of sight, out of mind, the little embryo is so little I can't see it, and it's located in the lab someplace or in liquid nitrogen, out of sight, out of mind, I don't have a problem with that, people would argue. Well, just please remember, especially in November, Missouri voters, that you were once out of sight, you were once out of mind, and you were afforded the protections of life. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen each week to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of Worldwide KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.